Hello there, and welcome to this, the 500th edition of World Radio Club. Yes, it was on the 1st of July 1967 that World Radio Club went on the air for the first time. Since then, the topics we've discussed have ranged from the world's smallest television set to Britain's giant radio telescope at Jodrell Bank. Well, today, as perhaps you've gathered, we're having a bit of a party. We have an audience of keen DXers, both from Britain and overseas, and they'll be putting a whole variety of questions to our special team of experts. And they are from the International Shortwave League, a very well-known DXer, Desmond Collins. Representing the BBC, Bill Wood, the head of our Engineering Information Department. And what World Radio Club party would be, could be complete without that star of the shortwave bands? Yes, our Henry, Henry Hatch. So, with introductions complete, may we have the first question, please?
My name is David Lynch. As AM signals travel further during the night, do FM signals act in the same way?
Yes, a question clearly for Bill Wood.
Well, I think it's really important to differentiate between AM and FM and to collect them in terms of the frequency with which those modulation systems are used. AM, as it's referred to in this context, really means medium frequencies. And I think most people know that medium frequencies after night time are reflected from the ionosphere and they can travel very large distances, whereas by day they do not. Now VHF, the band which is used mostly for FM transmissions, is not similarly effective. Only under very unusual conditions does VHF travel a very long distance, and therefore VHF is usually used for short distance listening, high quality local broadcasting, and it doesn't, as has been suggested in the question, travel a very long way.
David, I hope that clears up the issue for you. Anyhow, delighted to welcome to our celebrations an American ham, WB0GIX. Tom Starr, who's in his third year at a university in Germany, on holiday now in London, very happily. And Tom, I believe you have a question for us.
Yes, I do. I think that all of us would agree as SWLs, shortwave listeners, and hams, that fading is a constant problem in our reception. What can we do to alleviate this problem?
Well, Tom, he's troubled with QSB. What can he do about it, Desmond?
Well, it's a very difficult thing. It's something that all shortwave listeners basically have to put up with. What one has to do is to get the maximum signal that you can into a receiver, and therefore the best thing is to set up the best aerial system that you possibly can, feed it into an aerial tuner unit before it goes into the receiver so that you'll get a strong signal, or as strong a signal as you can.
I'm afraid, though, you're quite right. There's very little can be done about this. Everything is done at the transmitting end, and the manufacturers are doing wonderful work on the receiver end. But with all this gain, we have to remember that the ionosphere is so variable with automatic gain control and everything that we have in the receiver, that variations through the ionosphere, through the sun's action, natural causes, can still give variations of as great as 1,000 to 1. Am I right there, Bill?
Yes, that's so. But what about diversity reception? Now, the BBC, of course, has to do long-distance reception all the time for our relay stations all over the world.
Yes.
We set up diversity aerials, and we have a new thing with nice words to drop in technical circles called a correlation combiner, which not only takes the two RF signals, picks the best of them and so on, but also phases and combines the audio signals to give the maximum intelligibility from those two signals received by diversity paths. And this is making a fantastic difference to the quality of our signals as we transmit them from our distant relay stations, which are fed by shortwave links.
So if the problem can never be solved completely, Bill, at least it can be very, very much alleviated.
Well, we find this is so, but of course it's a tremendously expensive answer and not open to most amateurs.
Mm-hmm. And at this point, who has the next question, please?
I'm James Wyland. I listen both to shortwave and DXing, And I get a bit worried because the amateurs give their call sign, they know it so well, of course, and rush it. And having got all excited, waiting to hear where it is, I miss it. Could I ask amateurs, perhaps, to give their call signs a little bit more deliberately?
Yes, I think that's a very, very valid point. Of course, it has to be said that in most instances, amateurs are talking to one another. You're talking to somebody who knows you jolly well. And when I sign G3GSW, I'm pretty sure that the chap at the other end knows me not only as that, but as Frank, perhaps over many, many years. I think we do tend to forget that there are many people, perhaps in faraway places, desperately anxious to learn who they're listening to. I mean, particularly with the rarer call signs, I've suffered this myself. You hear a station perhaps in Nepal or somewhere like that. You're terribly keen to get the call so that you in turn can go back and give them a shout. You miss it, not only because of static, because also, to some extent anyhow, there's been the fault of being too fast at his end. I take that point. I wonder if G2CBB Henry Hatch thinks the same.
Yes, I don't think there's much to add to that for our friend here. Of course, you see, an amateur is merely complying with the terms of his license. He must identify himself before and at the end of each transmission. Now, he does that, but with all respect to the listener, you see, I don't often think of listeners whether they're enjoying the conversation I'm having with somebody or not. I'm more concerned with my contact. I'm sorry, but this is my frank answer to this.
Yes, Frank. John Milton, when you sign G8KIS, do you say G8KIS, or do you say George 8 kilowatt item sugar, or whatever it may be? How about that, John?
Well, Frank, I think I must be a real villain here because I live only 3 miles from our questioner, and the fact that he doesn't know my call sign indicates that obviously I go wrong here.
Yeah, well, of course, one of the most experienced amateurs in our audience tonight is certainly G6JP. I'm not going to let him get off the hook. What about this, George? Are we a bit slovenly in the use of our call signs?
I think you are.
Thank you very much. But I've heard you on the air, George. What about it?
Well, I'm not very good at it, but there are very many people who just gabble it and hope that other people can hear it. They know who they are, but they don't realise that the other chap may have difficulties.
Mm. So you would say, let's all be a little kinder to listeners, because after all, they could be, just could be, interested in what we have to say and in our call sign.
Yes, and really, they should send it phonetically with common sense or reasonable words.
And now, while our team takes a short break, it seems to me only right and proper that we should meet two men who play a key role in putting this programme on the air. Now, Reg Kennedy, you've produced several hundred editions of World Radio Club. Of all the items you've featured in the programme over the years, which stands out most clearly in your memory?
Well, I was going to say it wasn't while you've been here, Frank.
Well, that's not quite like that,
really. In fact, it was when your predecessor, Pete Barnaby, who actually couldn't be here tonight, and he's very sorry about that. But Pete and I, we flew with the Royal Air Force about 18 months ago now, and we took a couple of tape recorders with us. And we took off, you know, climbing well up about a couple of thousand feet, yeah. And we were doing some low-level stuff over the North Atlantic. And to our horror, the tape recorder which we were recording on suddenly began to billow smoke. And there it was in a piston-engined aircraft with petrol all around us, and the poor RAF doing a nut. Fortunately, we managed to unplug it, the fire went out, and we didn't have to ditch it over the North Atlantic, but we were all right.
Who but Reg could burn up a tape recorder? Anyhow, now to meet our present producer, Richard Lamley, G8LAM, who's also been involved in a recent disaster, his aerial flew down. But, Richard, what news tonight?
Well, happy news this time, Frank. I've got a letter from our friend Rudolf Heim, who's Secretary General of the European DX Council. And it begins, Dear Frank, Dear Henry, Dear Reg, Dear World Radio Club Secretary. That's through the glass there. And he says, on behalf of the European DX Council, I have the pleasure to send you our best congratulations for the 500th World Radio Club programme in February. Rudolf says he can't be here, but he says, you can be sure I'll be with you in mind. And he wants to wish us all success we need to carry on making the next 500 programmes. And he says, Reg, he hopes to meet you during the 11th European DX Council Conference in Brussels.
Yes, it is Whitsuntide, actually. Yes, we'll be there.
Yes, everywhere.
Looking forward to that very much indeed.
Jolly good, and thanks, Richard. Thanks, Reg. And now it's Back to business with another question, please.
Chris Bovey, what effect on the listener's choice of radio stations when the new frequency allocation for medium wave and long wave is made?
I notice a frown crossing Bill's face. That must mean that he has the answer, I suppose.
Well, it just makes me miserable, that question. After November 1978, when the new frequency plan comes into force, I regret that our forecasts are that almost every listener to low frequency and medium frequency bands is going to find things worse than they are at the moment. There have been bids for many, many new stations, much higher powers, and we're going to find that many of the frequencies that we've been used to getting reasonable results after dark are not going to have any usable result at all. I once said to somebody, may the Lord have mercy on you after dark, and I suggest you move to VHF if you want to do local listening.
Poor old Bill, a bit depressed by that question. Let's hope that we end with a slightly happier one.
Charles Lucas, when are we going to reach some spot minimum?
Well, questions don't come much briefer than that. Let's ask Henry, when are we going to reach some spot minimum, Henry?
The very latest prediction I've had, and I think my friend Louis Preckner in the audience will confirm this, that it will be July this year. But this is an interesting problem, this. When I was working in propagation for the BBC, we used to have a curve. Do you remember those curves, Bill?
Yeah.
They used to come down and dip for minimum, and they used to go 4 years up and 7 years down. But now, to my knowledge, we've had a minimum for about 2 years or so. Now, this 2 years or so, we've been completely flat at minimum. I mean, nobody will really make up their mind when minimum is coming. But July is the latest forecast, and that's all I am able to say.
But it could be that Louis Preckner in the audience there has something more to say.
Thank you for inviting me. Minimum doesn't mean anything at all.
Thank you. What does it mean then, Louis?
Because what matters is the low state of solar activity and not the actual minimum, which is different for solar spots or for many other activities. We've been in, over a very long period of very low solar activity, and if the next maximum is low, we may continue for quite a while. Sorry to be so vague.
No, but Louis, enough of these solar spots. When is the 10-meter band, for instance, going to be wide open once again? Give us a date, for heaven's sake.
I don't want to commit myself.
And that, I'm afraid, is the point in our programme where we have to close the proceedings on this, our 500th edition. Sincere thanks to our guests for some truly searching questions, and to Desmond, to Bill and Henry for knowing, well, nearly all the answers. Next week, our 501st edition, we'll be finding out how you can predict long-distance propagation on the VHF bands, and we'll be bringing you our regular bulletin of up-to-the-minute DX news from the BBC's monitoring station at Caversham. But meanwhile, from all of us here, it's goodbye for now.